It's easy to get swept up in all the pinching, peeing, titty torture, tying down, tickling, and penguin suit wrestling on Netflix's new show, Bonding. But at the heart of the series is a story of two friends growing up together and sharing some very intimate experiences.
We know Netflix's safe word is, "Are you still watching this?" But you won't need to use it since the 15-minute episodes go by pretty quickly and Bonding really keeps you tied down to your chair.
Today, we're chatting with comedian Brendan Scannell about the new Netflix series Bonding, where he's cast as the assistant to a dominatrix.
Plus, what happened to the TV reboot of Heathers?
And is Pete Buttigieg Indiana's new top gay? I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Hello, this is Brendan.
Hi, is this Brendan Scannell?
It is, yes. Hi, how are you?
Hi, this is Fausto.
And Mark from Feast of Fun. How are you doing today?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm enjoying you on Bonding.
Oh, yeah, thanks for watching.
On Netflix. Available on your Netflix.
Streaming now.
How familiar are you with leather and sex work in order to prepare yourself for this role?
Well, you know, I won't get into too much detail in my personal life, but I definitely had a fair amount of research to do before I started shooting.
So, like, do you audition for this role and they pulled out a whip and said, okay, flog this gentleman over here?
I mean, the thing about TV production is that, like, as an actor, you're always the last thing added. It's like, you know, a writer, a director works on something for years and years, and then at the last minute, I submitted a tape in October, and I found out I got it a week later, and then a week after that, I flew to New York on a red eye on a Thursday. I got there Friday, did a fitting in a bunch of leather at a really small production house in New York, and then on Saturday started shooting. This one in particular kind of had no, it was so kind of like run and gun kind of micro budgety that there was no rehearsal time or anything, which is kind of the best part about being an actor is here.
So is there a difference between a Grindr hookup and going to an audition at this point?
I mean, they are quite instantaneous, right?
You're like, let me see photos of you. Come over here, take your clothes off, put this leather harness. And you're I think this is an audition, I think.
I mean, I hope it is. Otherwise, it's, you know, something I'm being tricked into doing.
So what we're seeing in Bonding is like pretty much like you guys didn't rehearse any of those scenes. You just had your lines ready and you just went and they filmed it and that's it.
The way things typically work is, you know, you'll get cast in something and maybe you'll do like a week of table reads or rehearsals or meetings. And just the way this one was working with my schedule was I was finishing up this other project and basically finished shooting that. And then the next day had the flight in New York and we shot it kind of in between Thanksgiving and Christmas, which is a time when not that much stuff actually happens. So it was very quick. And actually, if you've seen it, there's this scene with Zoe and I where we are on a staircase and we're in this big fight in the middle of episode 5 or episode 6 or something like that. And that was the first thing Zoe and I shot together. And I had met her like an hour before.
Oh, wow. That's that's good. Instant charisma.
I did actually watch the series on a recommendation of a porn star friend. They're like, oh, this show gets it.
Who was that?
I forget who it was.
You know. You don't want to say that.
Oh, you have multiple, I guess.
Yeah, I have multiple. Mm-hmm. And so I was
okay.
Just, what?
No, I just said you bring up the name and then you don't want to say.
Well, I didn't bring up the name. I just said a porn star friend. You know, it was somebody from Facebook. I'm not really friends with them. Okay. You know, the truth is out.
Well, Brendan, I mean, in terms of like preparing for this role and sort of, you know, you've done, you are certainly cast in this very anticipated TV series for Heathers.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it was like there was a lot of production problems and I guess the show had difficulties in getting to the air. But it sort of got you into the mind space of casting people as this sort of like rebellious kind of dark comedy personality, right?
I mean, this is this type of stuff. Heather's Bonding is definitely kind of my artistic sensibility. I think both shows are very funny in different ways. And I think the thing with Heathers was very like, there are just so many decisions you're not privy to as an actor. It's kind of one of like the great things, but also the frustrating things. But yeah, that show is currently available to watch. Kind of just got released sort of unceremoniously last October. But you can watch it on iTunes or on Paramount Network. If you're overseas, I think on like HBO. Mm-hmm.
So much of your stand-up is about revealing your personal life, and I'm just getting a sense, I'm just talking to you about the role right now, that you're kind of like a little bit cautious about revealing how being cast in these dark comedies is affecting you as a person.
Well, I guess with stand-up, it's like, yeah. Stand-up is all about, at least in my case, I do use a lot of personal material, stories from my life, that sort of thing. And, you know, as all this stuff starts happening, I'm just trying to figure out the best way to, like, keep my mental health positive and stay in control of what I can control. And so stand-up's mm-hmm. always been something that, like, as you know, it's yours, it's your baby. But with acting and doing these other shows, you are kind of, you are a tool for someone else's vision.
Yeah, it's kind of a very difficult space you get into, especially like when you're performing your own life story for, say, like a showcase. And like, I actually met you at Shannon Knoll's We Forgive You.
Yeah, I love Shannon.
Showcase. And, you know, part of it is like, when for people might not be familiar, so when I was in my 18, 19, 20s, year olds, is that a phrase or something?
Late teens.
My late teens and early 20s, I worked as a sex worker. And so I had, you know, at the height of the AIDS crisis. And it was basically like stuff that we did as friends to sort of give each other material for performance art stuff that we were doing. So we were doing things that were even more and more outrageous and dangerous and sort of on the edges. And in some ways, you know, following this, the plot lines of the show that you're on, bonding, you know, sort of like you get swept into this sexual escapade that you're not ready for yet. And so for me, it's like, this is my life, you know, I'm telling about this. And so at times that have been sort of a cast or invited to perform in these kind of comedy, true story showcases, inevitably somebody involved in it is very off-putting in the way they sort of dismiss your feelings or your story as not genuine or true. And you just kind of get in a situation, you're like, hey lady, this is me, this is my life, you know, please be gentle and please hold this with love and kindness, because these are people bearing their souls to you, and you're just treating this as products to be stacked on a shelf.
Yeah, well, I think we are, not to like talk about society or anything, but we're constantly consuming so many things that I think it becomes very easy to kind of like quickly dismiss things that don't resonate with us because we have to move on to the next thing.
Do you remember the story that you did for that showcase?
That was in the upstairs of that art space in Chicago, right?
Yep. Yeah.
What I think it was something like that you were like staying with family and you had an accident in the middle of the night.
Oh, maybe I peed the bed?
Something like that. I either peed in your bed or you farted and it wasn't a fart that came out or something like that.
Oh, God. Hey, that was not me.
I was there that night, but I came late, so I think I missed you. I missed your number, but I did hear Faustos.
Yeah. I miss Chicago. I love performing there. The audiences are like so present and get it. There's such comedy going audiences I miss performing there.
Do you remember when Fausto did his thing and then he took a Q&A and there was a guy that said, hey, I was a sex worker too. I don't know if you remember.
He stood up
and said that too. So he came to testify, and then he stopped us afterwards because he had been on a first date with a girl. And he had never discussed any of this with her. And so after he stood up and been like, I was a sex worker, da da da, like, she just kind of like quietly like got up and left.
Wow. And I was just like, I do have like some friends of mine who have been, and it's, you know, it's to approach it kind of like coming from this comedy space, it's the show's a bit like haphazard. It's two young people in over their heads, not always making the exact right decisions. And so I think it's from a true story of the creator, writer Doyle. It's from a true experience he had in his early 20s. And so I always felt like I was just trying to help tell his story and try to bring as much like truth and gravitas to Pete and respect to the story, while also, you know, realizing that it's kind of supposed to be this fun sex romp.
Well, that's the thing. It's like when you start telling your story, either as a, you know, staged production with actors or you're doing it as yourself, inevitably it's going to resonate with some people in the audience and they're going to come up to you and say, your story means a lot to me. So this guy afterwards, his girlfriend sneaks out.
Well, not girlfriend. They were.
The person he was on a date with. And I guess he did something else happened after that, Mark, didn't?
Oh, with him?
Yeah.
Oh, months later, he left Chicago because he was a comedian. And he wrote this scathing thing on like how comedy in Chicago sucks, how people in Chicago suck. And it was just like it made the rounds and just everybody attacked him. And I was just like, wait a second, that's that guy.
And that's the thing about it is like, you know, for performers and actors, you know, we're always looking for a connection with an audience. And when that connection doesn't happen, it just can be really like devastating. You know, we want to be sort of like burn the bridge as we seek sunnier pastures. Now, you're from Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And then you went to New York City first.
Northwestern Chicago.
No, you went to school here.
Yeah, I'm from Valparaiso, Indiana, like an hour from Chicago. And so my whole family's from the south side of Chicago. And so I kind of came into Chicago a lot and did like Second City when I was in middle school and high school. And then I ended up going to Northwestern. And then after that, I moved to LA pretty much immediately.
Oh, so you went straight from sort of a Second City, kids to, do they have a separate name for the program for children?
Or? Second City Babies.
Second City Baby. I think I was in like the teen ensemble, if you can believe it.
That must have been a hell of a lot of fun.
It was fun, you know. At that point, you kind of are like just doing impressions of what you see on SNL. You know, I think I like broke out a Barbara Walters impression age, you know, 12 or 13 in one of those like shows. And
was your Barbara Walters like Gilda Radner or more like?
It was broad and I don't think I even knew who Barbara Walters is. I just knew her from SNL. Mm. But I think we performed at like the ETC stage.
Yeah.
And I was probably like 14 years old. And then I kind of ever since then, I've been doing comedy.
When you were a kid, did your parents let you stay up late on a Saturday night to watch Saturday Night Live?
Yeah, we had like a basement television situation. So mm-hmm. I would watch Friday night stand-up every Friday. And then on Saturday, I would watch SNL. Mm-hmm. Friday night stand-up being on.
That's late for a kid. You know, it's like
a lot up late nowadays.
These days. But yeah. I get in so much trouble to stay up late. And of course, like it was during Eddie Murphy's heyday. We were howling, and when my mother wake up and you was like, you kids gotta go back to sleep.
Yeah.
We'd be in a lot of trouble for staying up watching Saturday Night Live.
Mine was like transitioning between, I kind of like hit the tail end of Sandler, Farley, that world, and then moved into like Molly Shannon, Sherry O'Terry, Will Ferrell, that era, Chris Kattan. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was like, I had all the DVDs.
Well, and for a lot of kids, like those catchphrases, those jokes is a way for them to bond with each other, you know? And so like my sister and I got a hold of Eddie Murphy's Raw on cassette tape. And we were howling and we'd be like, Eddie, why'd you stick your dick in the sink? Oh my God. And the Mr. T having sex with Michael Jackson and, you know, all those little bits.
Yeah. I remember Buckwheat. Yeah. That was a big one for me for Eddie Murphy.
Okay.
Where you are like as like an 8-year-old doing like a little bit of Ebonics, and that's in probably not that great way looking back.
Yeah, but it's like, if it wasn't for Eddie Murphy, Saturday Night Live would not exist. I mean, the show was tanking. Yeah, he was like a one-man show. You know, when they had the anniversary, Eddie Murphy was a little bit salty about it, you know?
Yeah, I feel like people, when they leave that show, sometimes have, like, complex relationships with it.
And what it sort of like are you grooving on these days, comedy-wise?
Bonding, currently streaming on Netflix.
So you're like kind of like a comedy masturbator. You look into a mirror and do jokes for yourself.
Yeah, I'm like my own work.
I know some drag queens are that way. Like they do their material and then they'll stay at home and they'll watch their own show over and over and over again.
That sounds healthy. That does not sound like a pathology. I mean, I love Barry right now. That's one of my main shows. I loved Shrill. Ryan O'Connell has this great show called Special, also on Netflix.
Yeah.
Tim Robinson, he did that show, I Think You Should Leave, and I think it was the funniest sketch show I've seen in years. So, yeah, those are kind of my jams right now.
Yeah, it seems like in terms of Netflix right now, they're starting to do more and more queer LGBT programming, and it's really in some older, you know, guard or generation of filmmakers, they're seeing it almost it's stressing them out because they feel like LGBT filmmaking or storytelling in some ways has been, because it's gone mainstream, it's harder to develop these shows for them. I don't see how that would be possible, but I can see like if you're sort of known for doing these like queer film festivals, and all of a sudden it's like Netflix, you know, every mainstream television platform is doing very much the same stories and narratives. It becomes kind of like, what's the point of this festival? You know.
Well, I would say that for me, like Bonding was made like by this French company called mm-hmm. Black Pills, and they produced it with this other company, Anonymous Content, out here. And, mm-hmm. And so it was never going to be on Netflix. And then it did three festivals last year. It did Cannes TV, then it did Outfest in LA, and then it did Frameline in San Francisco. And, because of those festivals, Netflix saw it and had heard of it, and they watched it and they bought it. So I actually did this project basically because I knew it was shooting in New York and I wanted to go to New York, and the story resonated with me. I thought nobody would ever see this, to be quite honest.
Oh, really? You're surprised by it?
Well, I thought that it was going to be on this French platform that, you know, no one of my friends are downloading a French platform. I'm sorry. none of my friends could even like download the Paramount Network app to watch others. So it's like the thing about Netflix is like it's incredibly democratic. It's released in 190 countries instantaneously. It's been an amazing 2 weeks.
Mm. Do you think it takes like a more of a European sensibility to put on a show like Bonding?
I mean, that's interesting, right? It's this, the French execs who are all awesome would come to set and these kind of like shocking things would be happening on screen, and they'd be like, yeah, like, why don't you do more? Like, push it farther. And I don't know if an American company, other than maybe Netflix, which has the ability to kind of push the envelope, and HBO, would kind of be as laissez-faire about the show. It was pretty hands-off. And I think that's kind of why what you're seeing is writer Doyle's kind of vision.
Now, in your comedy that I've seen, you've talked a lot about Mike Pence, who is the former governor and now is our vice president. And I was wondering, what do you make of Mayor Pete Buttigieg from South Bend, Indiana, running for president of the United States?
Well, I'm kind of furious that a different Indiana gay is now more famous than I am. I really thought 2019 was going to be my year where I kind of like ascended to the upper echelon, kicked Blair St. Clair off the throne.
Blair St. Clair who?
Right, as like top gay of Indiana, and here comes Pete and Chasten Buttigieg dethroning me. It's very Game of Thrones. At the last minute, felt like I was Daenerys, and now Pete is Jon Snow. But not sure if you watch.
I watched it. Did you watch last night?
I did. Yeah, I did.
Yeah. No surprise there, huh?
Destruction.
Spoiler alert, people. You're on a talk show right now.
We haven't spoiled anything yet.
I haven't spoiled anything. Oh, but I think Mayor Pete's great. Very captivating. Great speaker. Saw him speak last week here in L.A. And I think he seems rad.
You know, he met his husband on a hookup app.
Hinge, right?
Unhinged, yeah.
Hinge. I'd never even heard of it. I mean, if it's not Grindr and Scruff, what's the use, right?
I'm sure Mike has been on Grindr or Scruff.
You mean Mike Pence?
Buttigieg.
Oh, Pete.
Oh, Pete, sorry.
Mike, slip of the tongue.
Well, that's the thing. Is like they've probably been on those hookup apps. You know, you've probably somewhere. And this is the thing, is that all the data of these hookup apps is owned by a Chinese national company. So they could, you know, I don't know. We might have like a Watergate. If Buttigieg becomes president and the Chinese company wants to blackmail him or something, and he's like, you know, Grindr might become a Watergate.
I guess Pete's one of those people that doesn't send ex photos, even back then.
You didn't think he showed his like military photos with his gun pulled out?
No, definitely not.
And be like, ever. I'm ready to lock a load.
That's a terrifying, terrifying idea. I do always forget that Grindr's owned by a Chinese gaming company. It's kind of horrifying.
I think they're being pressured to sell it back to America. I'm not sure exactly what's going on with that, but there's like all kinds of privacy issues with these dating apps, you know. I imagine for you,
I have some friends who work in corporate out here, and you know, it's like, you know, very like LGBT driven teams. But like you can never really control who's owning the company you work for, you know. Like everything I've done, it's you know, owned by these multi conglomerates who I love. Hello.
Wait, I'm sorry, the call dropped out for a second. Who do you love? Me?
Multi-conglomerates, you know, multimedia corporations. Love them.
Well, so when you're going out on dates with guys at this point, like, you know, now that sort of has bonding sort of like compromised your romantic life in some ways? Or are people sort of having, you know, the inability to distinguish between the characters you play and your real life self?
TBD. I think that one hallmark of the gay community is that we have the ability to be incredibly unimpressed.
Well, some dominatrix and like S&M people are like you know, calling for a boycott, blah blah blah, you know, cancel culture, because why? Bonding does not really represent the lives of dominatrixes and yada yada yada. And I'm just kind of like, it's just one story, one show, you know. And part of it is that there is a you know, rarity in telling these kinds of stories, especially in a comedic level, on even a mainstream, you know, internet platform like Netflix.
Yeah, I think that one of like, you know, there Netflix is that has so many positives to it, and that it has the ability for so many people to see it. But with that comes, you know, the kind of wider scrutiny. And, you know, it's kind of like you said that we're not trying to tell every story. We're trying to tell a story. And I think that like the queer community also is kind of trying to figure that conversation out, where like, you know, if a movie comes out and it's depicts a certain type of queer life, but it's not exactly your experience, I think people can be quick to kind of like denounce it. But, you know, I hope that the somewhat success of Bonding leads to, you know, more shows about BDSM and sex work and that kind of thing.
Well, I mean, you can do a death drop.
Do a death drop.
I'm impressed about that. And I'm wondering, it's like, you know, I'm sure people ask you, like, why don't you just dress up in drag and audition for RuPaul's Drag Race and so on?
You know, I'm just like not that skilled with a makeup brush. I have like kind of famously shaky hands. And so it's difficult for me to do like eyeliner and that kind of thing. So
that
drag was never
brand,
really an
though,
option.
Like the spastic drag queen.
Right. I mean, I love drag. I love going to it. and seeing it, but it's just not my journey.
Who are you fans of?
I love Alaska.
Yeah.
Big Alaska fan. I'm kind of skipping this most recent season. I'm going to catch up, you know? Mm-hmm. But I like to kind of like let them pile up and then watch them all at once on like a rainy day.
Mm. So World of Wonder just released a photo of the top four by mistake.
Oh no! They
quickly pulled it back. So
we'll see
if it comes true. I don't want to spoil it for anybody.
And people are like, "Oh my god, my favorite drag queen didn't make it all the way." No,
I know.
But people treat this like a sports team. You know, I wish that queer youth was as active in politics as they were in RuPaul's Drag Race.
I mean, it's like, you know, a huge hit out here. It's or everywhere, I guess, globally. I can't imagine like going from being kind of like a small time, you know, Chicago or Indianapolis drag queen and then going off and shooting a thing in Simi Valley for 3 weeks. And then when you come back, you have like 800,000 Instagram followers. That would super fuck with me.
Mm. And then you're a small time LA drag queen.
And then you're a small time LA drag queen hanging out at Mickey's. Hello.
And you're like, I got 2 drink tickets. Make them count.
Well, drag and stand up, like, I don't know if you feel this way, or they're very similar type of worlds where you like do it in the trenches and you do it because you love it and you do it for free for so long. And then, you know, eventually somebody starts offering you like $20 and you kind of just do it. And then the next thing you know, you're doing it for like more money, but you're doing the same exact kind of work you did. I don't know. I respect the hustle of that world.
Well, here in Chicago, like a lot of the comedians, especially the stand-up ones, they're just like, you have to do it for 10 years before you get anywhere or do anything with it. But I think, you know, when you have a TV show like RuPaul's Drag Race that, you know, plucks these, some girls out of relative obscurity after just a few years of doing drag, people think like, oh, I just need to put in a year or two or whatever. And then the next thing I know, I'll be world famous. And you're just kind of like, okay, well, let's see how that works out for you.
Yeah, I guess I would say it does take a long time. I mean, I started doing classes at IO Chicago when I was 18 and, I'm 28 now and it took me almost a decade to be where I'm at, I guess. Start young, wear moisturizer. Those are my recommendations.
Well, especially sunscreen if you're in LA and a ginger.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Lots of sunscreen covered in it.
Do you ever get pressured to like get Botox? Like, I got free Botox. I like one of those gift certificates.
Uh huh.
And I was, why the hell not? And I went to the clinic, and it was run by all these like Melania Trump fembots, Stepford wives from, you know, the Eastern Bloc. And she pulls out a mirror and she's like, "Look at your face. It's disgusting." We could put filler over here. There are wrinkles over here. You have waited too long to come into clinic.
Yikes.
And I'm just like, I just want to see what the experience is like. You know what? And she's like, look, give me $100 more. I will take care of your face.
I think your face looks better.
I just can't.
Did you get some done?
I did. And so she just like, it literally lasted like 5 seconds. Bip, 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 bip on this one. They call it the 11s, the lines between your eyes. And I was just like, okay, so now I'm slightly almost unnoticeable.
More now.
Yeah. I don't have my merch. So people need to buy the merch. What?
I'm not quite there. I just was offered free cosmetic dental work in exchange for social media posts. So if I come out in like 6 months with enormous veneers, you'll know why.
That's happened to a couple of drag queen friends of ours. They got on RuPaul's Drag Race. And the next time I saw them, they looked like Jim Carrey from The Mask.
Oh, yeah, with the teeth.
And they're it's showtime. And I'm like, girl, calm down. Put down the Botox needle. Step away.
So are we going to get a second season of Bonding?
I don't know. I would love to do it.
Just for the record, the articles that write about it say there is. So I don't know if you filmed. So like I haven't filmed it yet, but it has been sold and it is in production.
Oh, great.
They'll be calling you soon, huh? Nobody's called you to tell you?
This is the first I'm hearing about it.
Yeah, well, unless these blogs,
maybe they replaced you. I don't know.
They kill you off. He went to his home planet.
Yeah, they just keep Tiff. And I would love to do it. It was this kind of really small little engine that could of a show. And and I would love to get back in there. And, the production, the budget was so small. Sometimes on set, I like wouldn't even have a chair to sit in. So, let alone like a trailer or anything. So it was, it was intense, and it was cold in New York, and we shot in all these funny sex dungeons in Chelsea that are like kind of trippy.
Well, you remember when the film Tangerine came out and they were like trying to sell it as if it was all shot on iPhone 5s.
I think it was.
It was.
And so now, like, you know, anybody who does that, it's like, yeah, so what, you know? So,
right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, they were definitely a lower budget than us.
So you were in actual real sex dungeons when you did a lot of that stuff.
When we did some of it. Yeah. Yeah, there are the kind of these like very interesting spaces in New York.
Hmm. Well, there's a lot of people in New York, and they have a lot of needs, depraved needs. Did you run into some of the clientele there when that was happening, or was it just you guys did like after hours and stuff?
You know, we would just shoot actually during the day. Mm-hmm. So we would shoot in the morning, and the whole place would just smell of bleach. And then we would be out by 5 typically.
Mm.
Well, I wonder if this is good publicity for those sex clubs, like as seen on Netflix.
I mean, you can start the campaign for them.
Mm-hmm. I remember we used to did in the early days. We did a sound seeing tour of a gay bathhouse here in Chicago. And for years, they were like, as heard on Feast of Fun. And I was just like, oh, my God.
That's poor man's funny. Country is no more.
Yeah. One of the Chicago's oldest like gay bathhouses in the world was demolished, and they're turning into condominiums.
Ugh,
the world changes.
Sucks.
I hope that's water.
Yeah, I was just washing my hand.
Sometimes we've interviewed people and they're like, and you hear flush.
Oh, like, God.
Were you on the can all this time?
No, I have a dog and he gets fur all over me. So I'm like, was petting my dog. And then I was like, I need to get this pile of fur off my hand.
What kind of dog is he?
He is a Pekingese and a beagle. So he's a peagle.
Oh, does he howl a lot?
No, he's actually pretty quiet.
Wow, that's good, because those beagles can be really annoying with their howls.
Yeah, thankfully the Pekingese part of him is, like, silent.
Mm.
So you guys make a pretty cute couple when you're walking your dog and stuff.
Me and Humph?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's a ginger, too, so...
Yeah, I saw him on your Instagram. I was like, oh, that's such a cute dog from Central Casting.
Yeah, he's cute.
It's like you're like a Disney... when Disney does Twinks... You know,
yeah, I'm pitching this show to Grindr.
Well, I imagine you're going through a lot of auditions right now, and congratulations with the success of Bonding.
Thanks. Yeah, it's
just
been
whatever
cool.
Happens. Don't believe the casting couch is real because it's not.
Yeah, I could tell you that. Yeah.
Well, good luck with everything, love.
Great. Thanks so much for talking to me. Good luck to you as well. And maybe see you next time in Chicago.
I'd love that. Take love care, that. Brendan.
All right.
Brendan.
Tell Shannon hi. Bye.
Bye. For sure.
Bye.
Brendan Scannell lives in Los Angeles, California. You can check out Bonding on Netflix, now streaming. And it's fun to watch. Mm-hmm. It's 15-minute episodes. So it's kind of like you're almost like high-quality YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. Think of it as cooking with drag queens without the cooking. And without the drag queens, and without us, and
well, it's also like
bondage and
or
gingers.
Like a 2-hour movie that's just cut up into pieces.
It is very much like a film that's sort of episodic. Mm-hmm.
But I really like the idea of, because you know, if you look at a sitcom on regular television is like 20 minutes, 22 minutes. This 15 minutes just it makes it like a real sweet spot, so you can cram a lot into 15 minutes. And it's not much of a time commitment because we have so many things fighting for our time.
I do sense the hesitation from a lot of these actors that are getting roped into these roles that are very sexually aggressive or frank.
Yeah.
And in terms of like Hollywood, in terms of the mainstream industry, it's always, you know, actors always taught, don't talk about your personal life. Mm-hmm. Don't take roles that involve like nudity or sexual, yes. you know, compromising positions. And if you look like, you know, a show that's very successful, like Orange is the New Black, it's definitely walking the lines of softcore porn even. I mean, some of those scenes, just full on nudity, sex acts happening for, several minutes on the screen. And I'm like, am I watching Netflix or, you know, Cinemax or something like that? And so, I, you know, it's interesting to see that sort of tension, in Brendan's, interview, you know, like I sensed that there was a little bit of a hesitation from him that he was like, I don't know if I'm ready to talk about this role. So I really appreciate Brendan actually coming on the show and sort of exploring some of those ideas with us.
Yeah, you know, and it's too bad that the Heathers reboot didn't really work, because I was such a fan of the original movie. And granted, I didn't see the series because I think it was on a channel I don't have. And like he said, like nobody wanted to download the Paramount app.
There's such a thing?
Wow, I guess there is. Yeah.
I haven't even heard of it.
You know, well, Paramount Productions. Right.
Yeah.
So every
with a mountain,
every TV show or every channel has an app at this point in time. And so, you know, it's a shame, but, you know, it just got really just panned. People just didn't really like it. That it was, that turned out like the Mean Girls were the Mean Girls and not the way it wasn't supposed to be. Right.
Well, part of it is that, you know, in terms of the Mean Girls film and the Heathers film and, you know, sort of films or television shows where the misfit or the outcast, it, you know, things get turned on its ear. They're sort of fun to some degree because it's taking bullying to its violent, logical extreme. And now we live in an age where that bullying has gone to its logical extreme. So it's harder to enjoy TV shows that show violence towards teenagers and children. And to me, it's like, you know, it might have been an interesting show 20 years ago, but today it's a harder show for audiences to enjoy. When you see stories of shootings and and hear horror stories of teenagers taking their own lives, it's hard to laugh about it anymore. And, you know, I would like to live in a world where we sort of, you know, the reality of violence towards youth and gun violence is something more of a memory than a reality for people. And that's why I don't think a show like that can happen and didn't do very well.
Whereas something with bonding, it's like, you know, it's a, you have, a type of sex, you know, and sexual acts that are being shown on television that you really haven't seen too much before. I mean, of course you've seen people have sex and whatnot, but to have that BDSM portion of it, you know, because, you know, we all like know younger people, and it's like they do freaky things I didn't even think about doing when I was younger. I didn't even know those things existed.
But I can see like how people in sex work and bondage work get turned off when, you know, it's sort of like they're, you know, you're doing a comedy and the punchline is how awkward or disconnected the client can be or the situation can be. And sometimes, you know, sex work and bondage work can actually be very productive and, you know, uneventful. And maybe like in future seasons, they might want to explore that aspect of, you know, somebody getting ready to be so, yeah, this is going to be weird and awesome. And they're just like, it's just matter of fact. And I think that's, you know, at the core of bonding is the tension between the sex worker played by Zoe Levin and her relationship with her own romantic life and how that bondage work for her gets in the way. And so I think actually Brendan cast as her sort of best friend and accidental assistant to that provides a lot of the necessary sort of commentary or reaction to the outrageousness of the moments.
For sure.
Definitely something you definitely enjoy watching. And that's why I'm invited Brendan onto the show. And we hope you guys enjoyed it.
I want to remind folks that we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus because your contribution to the show is what makes the show happen. We wouldn't be able to talk to wonderful people like Brendan if it weren't for you.
Listen, we know Feast of Fun matters to you guys. We know you enjoy listening to the shows. And you've been thinking about it. It's like, should I give them a dollar on their Patreon page? I think not. I think I'll spend it on candy. Well, think of Feast of Fun as ear candy. Think of it as idea candy. Mm. You're going to fill up on Feast of Fun goodness, and you won't gain a pound, honey. Your brain will get nice and thick and juicy with humor and ideas and interviews. Just go to patreon.com/feastoffun. Go ahead. I support you.
I support you too. Thanks for listening.
Bye, everyone. Bye.